Welcome to Raising Consciousness with me, Lou Burrows, where raising human consciousness happens. On this show, I'm joined by guests to cover a range of topics and have conversations that will raise human consciousness for current and future generations. Now, let's dive into today's show. Pradeep, welcome to Raising Consciousness. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm super excited to be on the podcast to talk about consciousness awareness. I can't wait.
No, I've been looking forward to this as well. Where does your journey with consciousness, with everything personal growth, with everything mindset, where does that journey begin? And what was life like? What was life like before it, and what is life like now?
Yeah, so I personally believe it began at 21. But before it, I think there were certain things that were set up without me knowing to actually get me a bit aware. For those who don't know, if I can delve deep into it, my family originally from Sri Lanka. We were war refugees. We got persecuted, so my mom had to smuggle me in with a fake passport into the UK because my family was sought after. But we got there, we claimed political refugee status, but we got settled in a council estate. And if you're in the States, they call it social housing. And it was one of the roughest places in London. A lot of drug dealers, a lot of gangsters and so forth. So it was like I was the only Asian kid, but I had to be on the look, be aware of everything around me, all my surroundings. I was just looking around everywhere. And maybe that's a physical awareness. But then I got into a lot of fights. I had to defend myself. And, you know, you are the people who you surround yourself with. And no one went to university or college or had an education or career. So I dropped out of high school, still got into a lot of fights. From 16 to 21, worked in places like Tesco's, Clark's, hotels and bars and so forth. In that space, that 5 years, I was learning about people and sales. So I was kind of learning how conscious other people are. And I was very young, so I didn't get it as well. And also at 15, my uncle came and he goes, look, you need some discipline. So here's some weights. I tried ninjutsu, martial arts and something. It didn't work for me. What weights, Olympic weightlifting, I gravitated towards and had instilled discipline. Then at 21, I had a massive fight. Someone hit me on the head. Went into a four-hour coma. Didn't see anyone. Nothing special happened. Woke up and I'm like, okay, that's it. I need to change. And that's where my journey began, from dropout to Oxford to Harvard to VP to award-winning scientist, now a vice president of a business, corporate business, and now my own business owner globally. So I think consciously I awoke at 21, but before that, there are certain things happening in the background that set me up very well.
I was actually reading through, obviously, so for a bit of context for the audience, we connected through LinkedIn, and I was reading through a little bit of your story, obviously, before we scheduled for you to come onto the show today. And so, yeah, to kind of just understand a little bit more on like everything that you've been through from, obviously, in your teenage years with the fights to high school dropout to obviously then going to Harvard, winning scientist, to like everything else since, right? Is I think it, you know, for me, one thing that definitely comes to mind when I hear that and actually read that was that there's like hope for everyone in a way, and like it's possible for anyone when they make that decision to change, you know, to change their life, that they can, you know, like the power of the decision. I think Tony Robbins speaks about that in a book that I read of his, you know, like the power of a decision. And so is that something that you would obviously that's the journey that you've been through, but do you also believe that actually anyone, you know, no matter where they find themselves right now, has the power to change the course and the direction of their life through the power of the decision, just like ultimately you did?
Yes, just simply yes, anyone can do it. But I'd like to break this down to a couple of points. Number one, I believe that you make a choice, but you got to be You know, I have this saying that spiritually on that journey, you've got to be a yogi. Execution, practically, you've got to be a Navy SEAL soldier to execute. And then everywhere in between, you've got to be Forrest Gump. You've got to be stupid, foolish, fail, and keep running, right? Those are the kind of three characters that I think. And once you make the decision, you need to be totally aware of your surrounding, your opportunities, and know your strengths and weaknesses. And I'm big on like saying, hey, your weaknesses and who you're born to stuff, you can't control, but maximize your genetic strengths, know your strengths and what you can, you know, kind of utilize for your talent's benefit, right? And then go after those goals systematically. So you can do anything, but you got to, you know, I say to them, you know, you got to be an optimist living in reality. When I was 14, by the way, my English teacher asked me, Pradeep, you're a troublemaker. He goes, are you an optimist or a realist? Tell me. I'm like, well, I'm an optimist living in reality. So you make a decision, but then you be very realistic in the practical teams how to execute for your end big goal. And then in between, you all get rejected and fail and you just keep going.
And so like throughout also your journey, so you mentioned that there was like that, the time where you decided that actually you needed to change. Like in reflection and like looking back through your journey, what was it some of the other catalysts or big moments that you think either helped you to continue on the path that you're going on? Because I'm sure it wasn't all easy, right? I'm sure there was down moments, and I'm sure there was moments where it would have been easy to go back to like the old lifestyle, or you know, not go to uni, or like, you know, whatever the choice or the decision was, it, you know, at that time. I'm kind of interested in like, one, what kept you going, and two, how did you then use that as like fuel to keep you up, to keep you going? Like what were these other moments in your journey?
Yeah, it's actually a very good question. So the small victories and the big picture, that's what I talk about. The small victories was my first essay that I handed in at university, and it came back as a first class. I'm like, huh? I never get good grades, but I got the best grade. I'm like, this is my piece of work I got good grades on. So the small victories, one essay in one subject, in one module, in a degree, doesn't make sense, but it gave me confidence to say, hey, I can do science. Then that small victory became a good degree, a master's degree, a PhD Oxford and Harvard and so forth. Those small victories made sense. And the big picture vision is that I don't attach myself to a particular kind of creed or subject or authority, like, or my mindset. So it's a split between the ego and identity, right? So I'm not a scientist. I'm not a writer. I didn't go to Oxford. I'm not a dropout. I didn't go to Harvard. All these things I have done, but it's not me. I won't say I am, right? I will say I am other things, but I won't let the ego or the identity kind of ground me into saying what I am. So everything I went to and different direction, I never held back my identity. I said, okay, now I want to be business development. Let me go into learn about business development. Oh, now I want to start my own e-commerce. Let me take the risk. So every time there was ups or downs, and more downs than usual, what I would think is, okay, I am nobody. I need to learn this. I need to fail and I need to keep going. I need to shut out all the naysayers around me and just be singly focused because I know I can do this goal. And it comes down, you know, I always forget his name. There's this Japanese samurai warrior that killed 62 people in hand-to-hand combat. I think Joe Rogan mentioned it once as well, that he said if the samurai said that if you know a way of winning in one particular subject, you can apply it broadly in every other subject. So I think that's also a key as well.
You talk about there in terms of like the ego and not allowing to kind of become like your identity caught up in the roles. And it's very interesting. So last month I took like this program. It was basically like one part of the program was around that. The whole thing was centered around like, I think it's called like the personal mastery or something. And during one point, it was one lesson was how that actually none of us are like the character, I guess, of like the roles that we play. We are like pure consciousness playing like roles, right? And so obviously what you mentioned there just kind of brought it back for me. In your experience, but also from your perspective, like how do you feel like, well, so firstly, how did you get to that level of consciousness? Because I believe that, you know, it obviously takes a certain level of consciousness to get to that point, right? And then what words of wisdom would you also share with our listeners and watchers today that can help them to elevate to that same level of consciousness? Because I think so often we can become too attached to the roles that we play and that we take them on as our identity, when, like you're saying, I also resonate with that truth of like, actually they are the roles that we do play. That's all they are, a role, and that they aren't who we are. They aren't our identity. So I'm really interested to like explore that part of your journey and how you got to that level of consciousness.
Yeah, I can talk about this for 6 hours. So I hope you got food and water and everything, right? No. So it's an interesting question, because I believe that the ego is good, but you got to kind of put a damper on it and release it when you have to, because it does help, but then put it away.
Train it ultimately.
Yeah, right. Train it very well, right? So I'll give you an example. When you have big picture problems and so forth, I don't particularly go away and say, hey, I am this, I am that, I went there, I can sort this problem out, or I have this analytic data brain. I just kind of zoom out and say, hey, like, just almost be non-existent, say, what is the actual problem? Take away all the data in your head, like, take away the ego, or your goals and so forth. How do I tackle this problem logically to get to somewhere I want to be, right? So it's almost of saying, partake all the ego away. Interesting point here, and I talk about this as well, is that life and success is not black and white choices, but it's the ability to operate in the gray. So there's always a Pradeep in me that says, hey, I'm the street smart guy that learned on the council estate, and then there's the Pradeep that went to Oxford and Harvard, right? And there's a battle between these two Pradeeps. And I say, get the middle ground, utilize both of those things, and actually understand what's going on. So for viewers listening, I think I can go to any class in the world, and people like Tony Robbins and others are amazing. The best thing you can do is actually sit down and think and philosophize and come to your own conclusion and be self-critical and self-reflective. I think that's the best way to do it. There's nothing else or no one else that can teach you without you actually understanding yourself, and it goes, uh-huh, and it clicks here. That's the number one way. Number two way is I ask myself, is this knowledge that I've gained from some data that's come to me, or is this my intelligence? So people talk about knowledge and intelligence as the be-all, right? But I say awareness is the actual be-all. So take away all that and say, what is my gut saying? And what is my basic human instinct saying? And I go with that. Because, you know, Luke, I've been in rooms with the best drug hustlers in London, Nobel Prize winners, billionaire CEOs, right? And the best, I realized that 0.1% they have awareness. Like, you can have all the intelligence and knowledge, but if you walk into a room without knowing the data, the people, and so forth, but you have gut instincts, awareness, and consciousness of what's going on, that's a miracle. So normally people have it, but they don't tap into their gut instincts. And that gut instinct is marred by what they're thinking and emotion stuff. So if you take away the emotions, all the knowledge you have, and say, what my gut instinct's saying, I think you'll be well off as well.
I love that. So another course program that I took back last summer was all around intuition. And, you know, it speaks about what you just mentioned there. You know, like how sometimes, well, no, not even sometimes, you know, how we do have this superpower, right? Which is our intuition, which is our gut feeling ultimately. And it, you know, for most of us living in the world that we do live in today, for good or for bad, you know, whatever, it gets clouded. You know, it gets clouded by other people's opinions, judgments, our own limiting kind of beliefs sometimes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so basically this thing that I was taking was walking, you know, me through a process of kind of clearing all that out and to come and to step back into your one's intuitive guidance, intuition, etc. And so it's interesting that, you know, obviously you being in these rooms that you have been in, you sense and also feel that from the people that, you know, you are around. Because I think actually so often, you know, if you were to ask someone, let's just say on the street, for example, they would maybe think that actually the billionaire is actually operating from more of a place of intellect, you know, knowledge and intelligence more than intuition. But it sounds like actually that intuition plays a big part in, you know, in their success, and obviously in your success as well. And would that be fair to say? And then, like, whatever tips and words of wisdom would you have on going with your gut? Because I don't think, you know, one thing that also came up for me last year was how the first step, or one of the first steps, is to have the ability or to develop the relationship with yourself where you give your permission to trust yourself, right? You give yourself permission to trust your gut feeling and your vibes, rather than, oh, I feel this way, and push it to one side and just go with, like, maybe somebody else's opinion. So yeah, I would love to spend, you know, some time, like, talking about this, going deep into this, and actually hearing your perspective and any words of wisdom again that you have to share on the power of intuition and one's gut feeling.
Yeah, I think it's gut feeling, intuition's very important, because, well, before that, self-love, confidence, self-esteem is not arrogance, right? I think this generation has to understand that, and even the younger generation, because we come to a world where everyone's like, okay, be humble, everything, and it's important, but you got to say, hey, I love myself, I have confidence in myself and my goals and dreams, right? And then that's not arrogant if you say it out and you actually go ahead and do it. Once you have that confidence and self-esteem, I think that allows the gut instincts and the intuition to kick in. If you're always saying, hey, I can't think like this because I might come across arrogant or might come across overconfident, I think that blocks it, right? I think one has to know him or himself or their self's ability for then say, okay, I'm confident where I am, and then intuition and gut feeling comes out, and then you exercise it, because everyone has it. Even if you're a scientist and you don't believe in this religious spiritual thing, right? You're in the African Sahara plain and you're like a primate and all we evolved, you have gut feelings to survive. That's how it came about, right? So that gut feeling is all in us, because we all are survivors and we're here, we're flourishing, right? So the gut feeling is there, but to actually to release it out, right? What you need is the ability to trust yourself, and trust comes from self-confidence, self-love, self-esteem, and having small successes in a given area. And that's very important. I think that's how you actually release it. And the second thing you made very good point about is intelligence. I think intelligence is important. Having knowledge is important, but no one can have every bit of knowledge, right? The billionaire to whoever you just said, they operate on saying, hey, I have a team of talented people around me I've hired. I always hired brighter people than myself, Luke. That's how I operated. And I have the confidence to say people are brighter than me. And then you have a gut instinct to see how people react, how markets react, and so forth. Because at the highest level, you're dealing with ambiguity and risk. Risk appetite is the only thing that separates the very successful from the average or so successful. There's that ability to take risk in the ambiguity, in the gray. That's the difference. And I will die saying it to everyone, right? That is the difference. Not IQ, not EQ, not anything else. It's the ability to take the risk coupled with ambition, right? And those are the two things that actually make the world go forward. And so those people are operating on intuition, because there's no data set, there's no past history, there's no future trends that they can rely on 100% to get things done. So I think there again, these people are highly confident in their ability, so they can allow their gut instincts to take over. So that comes down to self-work, self-love, self-development, and then the gut instincts and confidence and intuition kicks in.
A question that's come up for me here is, you mentioned beforehand with like the confidence piece, and maybe I'm going here because in the past I've struggled with confidence, right? Although I've had people tell me that, oh, you know, you're so confident, and it's like, actually internally I don't feel that, but anyway, that's a different story. Like, but so you mentioned in terms of like the small successes that build up that can lead to self-confidence, where does, I guess, kind of like one's, what would you call it, overall kind of general kind of perspective and mindset fit into this? And kind of what I mean by that is, somebody might think that they haven't had those small wins or those successes, so they've decided that they're not confident. Maybe in the example that I've just kind of shared, and you know, we've kind of just joked about, in terms of like, actually people come to me quite frequently and says, oh, you know, like you look so confident, but actually what's perceived on the outside and what's happening internally are sometimes a mismatch, right? Like in the past I haven't felt confident, but that's my own internal like how I see myself, right? That's my self view. So I'm kind of interested in this kind of conversation of self-confidence. Is it the thing that, like, is there a stages before that? And maybe those stages before that is self-esteem, self-worth. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to like to touch upon that, because I think this kind of whole thing around like confidence is actually something that I know that I've definitely struggled with in the past, and I'm sure some of our listeners and watchers have as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all go through bad days, right? I'm not saying I'm confident every single day, and that's life, right? I think self-confidence really comes down to failure, rejection, and how much you've had it. If I die the most rejected and failed man on earth, I'd be very happy. And because that itself is an inspiration story to help most people, right? Because then every failure, you're getting iterations back. So I say failure is just a misconceived perception of something, right? And rejection as well. So what you're doing is getting iterations back and ideas on, if you can hit those failures and rejections and then kind of come back and have small success, that those build up confidence over time. And once you do it in one sphere, you can bring that over to other spheres. So really, the confidence actually comes from a place of hurt, failure, rejection, and how you bounce back, change yourself around a bit, even if it's love, business, exams, you name it, right? Boyfriend, girlfriend leaving you, husband or wife leaving you, whatever that is, right? You might have walked up to that girl and she rejected you, she's moved on, but you're thinking, oh, what happened, la la la. I think vice versa, if the girl likes someone and the guy's rejected, or you lost that job and so forth, I think the iterations on how you deal with those build confidence over time. And I think no one without those failures or rejections or trying can have ultimate confidence from nothing. It just doesn't work like that. Because even if you're talented, you need to utilize the talent to understand you have confidence. You can't just say, I think I'm talented here, I have confidence. The confidence will come as a direct action and reaction to utilizing one's talent, or actually going and being in a ring and being in the fight.
That makes sense. And in terms of, so for you, like, what's the difference per se of like, or your definition, maybe then difference of the other two in terms of like self-worth and self-esteem, and how they play into this kind of like, you know, what we're talking about here around self-confidence?
So self-worth, since it's my value that I bring to a certain project, business, or for me, it's actually bigger, right? The way I think is, if I get hit my goals, I can inspire generations to come, or even inspire one person. So my value has always been in the story. Yes, I want to accomplish certain goals, being a scientist, la la la, discover drugs, run a business, become, you know, wealthy, look after my family and look after friends. But then the value has always been big enough saying, hey, can I leave a story or legacy behind to inspire? I think if your value and self-esteem and self-worth is based on helping others, ultimately, I think the confidence goes to the roof. Because you know that what you're doing is always giving back. And that entity or whatever, if you believe in karma or spirituality, it will always go back. And that is kind of a positive energy loop. And it keeps giving you back. And you take it from there and your confidence raises up. In other sense, I think self-worth and self-esteem is if you master something and you win at something, you're like, hey, Pradeep, you can do this. You've been in worse situations. Hey, I know it's a bad day. You know, you can, you've been in worse days. So that's also self-esteem and self-worth as well. I think it really comes down to how you think about yourself and how you actually interact with all the data that comes to you and how much you can give back. And I would say be careful with the people you surround yourself with as well.
Yeah, so let's expand there. Be careful with the people you expand yourself with. It's definitely known that we become the average of the five people we spend ourselves, you know, our most time with. Sometimes that's more challenging than others, especially when, you know, close friends and also family. I think, you know, there's, you know, I've faced this challenge as well. So and for me, you know, I've come to learn that actually, you mentioned it beforehand in terms of like life isn't black or white, you know, it's in the gray. And I think that when it comes to our social circle, maybe more so, like we have more, I think, control and influence over that, you know, especially with the powers of tech and everything, you know, like we've connected through LinkedIn, and I hope and I'm confident that, you know, we can stay in touch and who knows, form a friendship and everything, you can get to know each other, right? So I think from like a friendship kind of social side, you know, we have a lot more power, control, influence over that. I think when it comes to family, obviously we don't necessarily choose our family per se. And so what's your kind of take on the balance between like, or just the situation, like when we think of like, be careful who you surround yourself with family, if a family member is maybe, let's say, too negative, you know. For me, I've come to learn to you know, to dive into empathy and compassion and actually gratitude as well, while also recognizing that that doesn't mean that I'm on the same end, that doesn't mean that I need to spend, you know, every single day with them, you know, like all the time with them, you know. So that's kind of where I am at in kind of my consciousness on this point. But where are you kind of on, yeah, well, like what's your thoughts around this topic? And do you have any like words of wisdom again to share with the audience around navigating maybe challenging family relationships when we are trying to be mindful of who we're spending most of our time with?
Yeah, I totally agree with this. You know, I do get it when people say you are the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. But above that, I say you're the sum of the five thoughts that surround you and go around your head, right? That's number one. And then is the five people, right? Because no matter what you do, you can't control your family members. You can control your friends. By the way, I cut down to two. There's only two people I talk to every day for 5 minutes. We talk about success, wealth, and goals, right? Others, I'm a super friendly guy. We're going to keep this friendship going. But I'm very careful with the data that comes out with family members and so forth. Again, no matter what comes at you and hits you, it's the thoughts that dictate how you're perceiving that data, right? So I'll say, hey, surround yourself with great people. If you can't surround your mind and head and thinking space, make sure the ability to self-reflect and your thoughts are healthy as well. So that five thoughts first, and then your five members or friends. And then you can't go wrong, because you know, there's only certain things you can control, and the only thing you can really control is your mind and thought. And you know,
so I'll put this to you.
I had students and mentees before particularly at PhD level, their family didn't get science. I said, move out and move away. If you can't shut the door saying, hey, nice, and make sure your thoughts are right in this, the right balance, and just go deep into it. I mean, there's only so much you can do. And I've learned the hard way that you can't help everyone. At one point, you have to push, send your message out, but people have to come to their own conclusions.
Yeah, totally. So on the point in like in terms of our thoughts, so a concept that I've been playing with kind of recently, like this year, has been like the questioning of like how much can we control our thoughts, right? So what I mean by that is like, I'm sure all of us at sometimes have stupid thoughts, right? But the challenge is that we believe those thoughts and we actually act on those thoughts and we reinforce those thoughts rather than consciously choosing the thoughts that we want to think. And I think that actually this, for me anyway, I would love to kind of get your perspective on this. The message of, you know, we control our thoughts doesn't necessarily go into the nuances of life and probably actually the complexity of how many thoughts we have on a day. Like there's so many, right? So I'm wondering like actually how much power or control do we actually have over controlling every thought that we have? And is it more about when we recognize a thought, then choosing if we continue to go down the path of thinking that thought or consciously choosing a new thought that empowers us and moves us more in the direction that we want to go, but, you know, obviously based on our goals, our dreams, our aspirations, the person we want to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's super hard. I understand where you're coming from. But I've come to a point where every thought, if it's not practical and going towards a goal that I have in a career or life or personal goal, or it's not going to benefit my wellness or anyone that I care about, I'll kind of negate that and say go away, right? And it's super hard to do, particularly in circumstances.
Tell us like the journey that has led to you, or maybe some of the things you've done, because for me it's a practice, you know, like somebody, you know, if they're listening to this, they haven't come into personal growth, they have nothing, you know, they have no idea what consciousness even is, they're not just going to be overnight going to be able to like control all their thoughts or, you know, let go of thoughts like just like that. So I'm kind of interested in some of the things that you've done over the years throughout your journey to get now to the level of consciousness where actually you recognize a thought doesn't serve you, you're able to push it away and to let it go.
Yeah, so it starts off early in the morning. I've got my affirmations written down and read them. So lifetime goals, year goals, short-term goals, even sometimes daily goals. So once you have that fixated goals in your head, affirmations, you know what the actual goal is and what the targets are, right? And then it sounds stupid, Luke, but 20 minutes in the morning, I'm walking around pretending that I'm actually hitting my goals. I'm not thinking about that. I'm actually pretending that I'm meeting someone, I've won that medal, or I've done that business meeting, and I'm in it, and I'm acting the reality, right? So again, my mind is now programmed to actually realize what's happening and what the goal is, and it's actually visualized, actually lived it before it happened, right? And then what happens is now the mind is like, okay, I've got a goal, I have an action, I've seen the action, right? And then you say, hey, this goal is not good enough for me, or this thought is not good enough for me. I'll give you an example. When I first started and had trouble at 21 around me, when I went to uni, it was like, oh, I'm going to the library, or do I go and see my mates? Then I say, no, library. That is not a choice. That's actually you saying no to a thought or an idea, right? So those little things like, hey, shall I sleep in a bit more or shall I go to the gym in the morning? That is you saying no to a thought or idea, but doing action. So once you do that and take those positive kind of affirmative, this is what I do, this is what I'm not going to do, go away thought, it comes about. But you need, I think, personally, affirmation or a goal. Then you have to visualize that, see it come through, and then the thoughts and saying no to it it starts small to big, it comes out, and it, you can execute.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like for you, the affirmations, the programming your mind towards a specific goal has been one of the most transformational strategies that you've applied to your life.
Yes, and then everything's like, okay, go, this. I'm not saying tunnel vision, not saying crazy, not saying don't have a balance in life, but then all your thoughts and ideas and actions are actually very, very shifted and focused, right? And there's nothing going in and out, emotion not taking over, it's fine, and you're doing it. And you're not a machine, you do have, it's you have a balance, but it's like the flow. It's like almost reality is this flow, and you're just kind of, it's like a bubble, a soap bubble, and you're just playing around with it, and the thoughts come, and you can just pop it where you want and just go with the flow.
Consciousness. What does consciousness mean to you? Like, if we had someone in front of us right now, and they have come across this concept of consciousness, or the concept of personal growth, or the concept of awareness, or really the concept of everything or anything we've spoken about today, how would you describe what consciousness is? Like, what does consciousness mean for you?
That you and I and everything on this earth and around this universe is one. There's only a few seconds I've witnessed it here and there that I've realized it, and it gives me goosebumps. I used to have hair on the head, my head, it used to stand up, but that's what consciousness is, to understand that we are one, and to understand that whatever you do selfishly, but selflessly for the bigger goal. That's consciousness for me.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate. If someone was to come to you, but you know, we're not one. I'm me, you're you. We are two separate identities. You know, we've got the planet. You know, we've got like, and they just can't wrap this idea, this concept that actually consciousness. Well, they can't wrap their head around consciousness, but they can't wrap their head around that actually we are all one. What would be your response or reply to help them to start to actually see that we are?
Yeah, I think that physical boundaries are important. I wasn't a very good at physics, but yes, I understand. Well, physical boundaries, and you and I are very different. We look very different and so forth. But the actual ability to understand that this is my species, this is you and me. There's almost a kind of a central kind of flow coming through each other. And I'm not saying you can test it. I'm not saying you feel it. I'm not saying I'm special. I'm probably nowhere near the yogic or whatever you call it, spectrum or whatever, right? But you just understand that everyone is one. Maybe it's called love. Maybe it's called unity. Maybe we're saying it wrong. Maybe it's not consciousness. It's called love. Sometimes I'm on the train, on the Metropolitan line, going into the city, right? And at Wembley Park, got in the train. The beautiful thing about London is that I'm standing there, and there's black, white, there's Asians, there's tall, there's big, fat, skinny. I don't know if I can even say these things, but babies, and there's adults, and I'm like, and I'm standing there sitting down just thinking. I'm just aware, and everything's, I'm like, wow, what a species, how wonderful we are. That kind of big picture thinking, I think, feeds into your consciousness and opens up the ability for you to actually accept everything as one. And it's very hard to describe unless you allow yourself to do so, unless you actually take away all your ego identity. I think it particularly activates with me is when I see a variety of people, or I'm in very grand structures or things that humanity has built. I think that raises me up and I say, whoa, you know, that consciousness comes around.
So I heard something again from this quest, this course that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode around personal mastery, where the teacher was sharing how actually consciousness is beyond like concepts, right? So it's beyond like the physical world. And I think actually sometimes that's where a lot of people can find a challenge in understanding, especially with how you see consciousness in terms of we are us all being one. You know, and I agree. I'm not saying I don't agree. It's because we see the physical world, right? Like for so long I found it a challenge to communicate and find the words to describe what I believe consciousness to be. For me, it was like the wordless, right? It's not something that you can necessarily physically see or experience, and so to be able to find the words was a challenge. But as like I'm sharing, you know, this idea of consciousness and feeding into what you're saying, this idea that we're one is beyond the physical world, you know, it's beyond concepts, beyond the physical world. And I think if people can start to understand that and to not necessarily like understand it right here, right now in this moment, but start to think about it, right? Start to go away or listen back to this episode over and over again. Just start to like dive into it and just open up your mind to it and open up their mind to like the vastness of the universe and this idea and this concept. I think then they will come to a greater understanding and hopefully a greater level of consciousness for themselves as well. So thank you so much for sharing your definition of consciousness. I think it's definitely fascinating. I definitely think so. In the time that we have left, I would love to give you, well, one, the opportunity to share where people can connect with you online, learn more about your work, and actually two, if you have any final thoughts or words of inspiration that you would like to pass with our listeners and watchers on today's episode of Raising Consciousness, then this is the time to do so.
Well, yeah, thank you, Luke. It's been fabulous. It's so nice to talk about awareness and consciousness in one podcast. I would say, through reaching contact, it's Pradeep Kumar Sasidharan, PK Sasidharan, on all my social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as well, and also Pradeep Kumar Sasidharan on LinkedIn. LinkedIn I'm quite active on as well. And if you want to email me, it's pks@donsville.com. I think Luke will put all the details.
Okay, I'll link those all down below in the description. So,
and also, I would say is that I'm here to help and serve. If I can help and serve you, I've done my part. My whole goal is now to talk about what I've seen in life, from the lows to the highs, back to the lows and highs, and try to say to the story, hey, you can do it if I can do it. On consciousness, I think also consciousness is very closely coupled, if not the same thing as awareness. I think if you just practice a few minutes a day of being aware of around you, who's around you, what's around you, I think that will awaken you. But I always say, hey, I have a saying that I say, life is a numbers game, a sales game, and a risk game. For me, I grew conscious because I succeeded by failing, by selling myself in certain endeavors and also taking risks. So if you keep failing and doing those things and taking risks and selling and branding yourself, where the success then becomes saying, hey, when you become successful, you're like, you don't want to keep it, you want to share it. So I say, hey, how can I get Luke more successful? Not that Luke needs it. Oh, how can I get that person successful? How can I help this person? And once you want to give away your success and ideas and thoughts, you become automatically aware and conscious of others. And that opens up your consciousness. I think that's very important as well. But to do that, you've got to be quite selfish and very regimented in your goals. You've got to help yourself before you help the world. That's what I say. So, you know, start with yourself, set those small affirmations, small goals, hit those goals, have small successes, and always say, how can I help people around you? And I guarantee you, after some years and time, you'll come to a place where, you know, that consciousness and awareness is right up there and you're doing good.
Really, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And for more after today's show, be sure to head on over to raisingconsciousness.show to get all of the show notes, transcriptions, videos for each episode, and a hell of a lot more.
And if you got value from this episode, found it insightful, or learned a thing or two, please leave a review where you can let everyone know that this show is worth checking out. I appreciate you so much. You'll be hearing from me in the next episode.